Welcome to the Costume Plot.
I'm JoJo Siu.
And I'm Sarah Tim. We're professional designers with a passion for costume design and the performing arts. Our podcast does contain spoilers. Accompanying slideshows for each movie are linked in the episode description.
We hope you'll join us every other week as we delve into the wonderful world of costume design in the Costume Plot. Hello, and welcome back to the new year of the Costume Plot.
Oh my gosh, 2024. We made it.
So crazy. I can't believe it's January already. But also, it's only January.
I'm excited that it's January. I have like a really busy spring coming up, so I've just been kind of like waiting for it to happen, and now it's finally, the wheels are in motion. It's almost time to be really busy.
There's something exciting about being productive again.
Yeah. I had like a weirdly like relaxed fall, so spring's gonna be hitting the ground running.
Yay. We're glad to hear that. Cool. I don't know that we have much to say for our introduction today.
Yeah, I don't
know.
You want to
give us our theme, Sarah?
Oh, yeah. What is our theme?
Well, we both ended up doing a Margot Robbie film, I guess.
That's what it is. I've never seen your movie, so I was like, I don't know. I don't know who we have in common.
I don't know how your movie relates.
I figured you picked it for a reason, but I didn't know what the reason was. Okay, great. Our theme is Margot Robbie movies. and I'm going to be covering the new Barbie movie. And the fervor for this film may have died down a little bit, but I kind of waited to cover it until it was available on streaming. And not like really expensive to rent, because when it first came onto Amazon Prime, it was like $20 or something to rent, and I was like, I'm not doing that. Yeah. So it's on HBO now. Yay. So of course this movie is from last year now. It's from 2023. I know.
So weird to say that.
It came out in this, it was like the movie of the summer, of course. We were all there. We remember. Directed by Greta Gerwig, who is one of, like, I would say she's probably the most famous female director right now. She did Little Women, Frances Ha, Lady Bird. She was nominated for the Oscar for Lady Bird. She has not won yet, but I feel like it's just kind of a matter of time. I'd be very surprised if she didn't get nominated for this one. The costumes are by Jacqueline Duren, who I believe we have covered before, because she's really prolific. She works with Greta Gerwig a lot. She also did the new Little Women, which we were just talking about off air, and I said that I don't ever want to have to cover it because people have really strong opinions about that film. But she also did the new Batman with Robert Pattinson. She did Atonement, the new Beauty and the Beast, which is another contentious one. People really don't like that movie. And she has been nominated for 8 Oscars, and she has won 2 of them for Little Women and Anna Karenina. So she's one of the big names for sure. So, of course, the plot of this film is that Margot Robbie plays a Barbie, and it's kind of confusing because all of the Barbies are named Barbie, and all of the Kens are named Ken, but she's stereotypical Barbie, and she's living her perfect life in Barbie land until one day she starts having strange thoughts of death, and her feet get flat, and she gets really scared, and so she has to go find out, she finds out she has to go visit the real world and find the girl who was playing with her, the girl who owns her. And the Barbies think that Barbie has fixed the world and the world is perfect for women, but she finds out that it's not. And things ensue, and it's great.
It's a very good summary description, Sarah.
Thank you. And there are a lot of interviews with Jacqueline about this movie. Obviously, like I said, it's the movie of the summer, so the press was like crazy at the time. So I'm sorry if I missed some good quotes or something, because I didn't have that much time to do this research. But I did find a nice Vogue interview where I got some good blurbs from her. One that I can say before I get into pictures is she said that Barbie, of course, is really interlinked with fashion, because the way that you play with a Barbie is by dressing her up. So like Barbie and fashion go very hand in hand. Clothes are her form of expression. And you don't treat Barbie like you treat a regular character, because the motivation for what she's wearing isn't from within. So I thought that was really interesting. She basically, like, Barbie doesn't make her own decisions about what she's wearing. She's just, like, wearing an outfit, you know? Like, and she also pointed out that all of Barbie's outfits are, like, situational. She dresses for whatever she's doing. So, like, if she's going to the beach, she has a perfect beach outfit with a matching hat, shoes, and sunglasses and stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. So let's get into it, and then I'll hopefully be able to tie in some of these other quotes I have as I go. All right, so I'm starting, of course, with the dress that launched a million cosplays. if you follow anyone who cosplays, they probably made themselves this dress this summer. It's the pink gingham sundress, and I just think that this is such a perfect look to start off the movie and to meet our Barbie in, basically. Pink, obviously, is Barbie's signature color. So, and then, like, the gingham is a very classic, timeless print, I would say. And the silhouette is very 1950s. Mm-hmm. And, I don't remember when Barbie first came out. I think she came out in the 50s. I'm going to Google it because I feel like people are going to get mad if I don't know. When did Barbie doll first come out?
I want to say 50s as well.
Oh, it says 59.
Okay. I gotta say it was like late 50s.
Yeah.
I almost said 1958, but I guess that was close.
Yeah, because the classic, like, black and white swimsuit is what I think of. That was like her first iteration. So yeah, a lot of these silhouettes harken back to like a 1950s silhouette, and it's definitely, it gives it an air of like timelessness. It's kind of like what we think of when we think of timeless Barbie looks. And then, of course, I am interested to know if this is two different dresses. I think it probably is. Mm-hmm. But it looks like it could be, like, you know, if you had this Barbie, this outfit could be convertible. Mm-hmm. Because it converts to this, like, little play suit thing. Like, and it's in the back. I don't have a back view, but in the back it's, like, open, and she has, like, little, like, boy short bottoms on, I think. So it's, like, a little beach outfit.
It's like an apron?
It has, like, it has that look, but it's, mm-hmm. it's almost like a dress that's, like, open in the back. I don't know. I think people call it a play suit. But yeah, I think it's very clear that they built most of this stuff. Let me see. Mm-hmm. She said something. Oh my God. Where are all my quotes? Oh, they only had 11 weeks to make everything. So they were still building stuff after filming had started.
I believe it.
Yeah.
Yikes, 11 weeks.
That yeah.
sounds so short.
I know. Considering like how many costumes there are just like in Barbie Land alone, I think that's wild. Let's see. And she said that all the costumes in Barbie Land fit into one of roughly 15 color combinations. And she said she riffed off the idea of a French Riviera beach in the early 1960s.
And wow, I think that's so specific.
I know. It's definitely all very, like, candy colored. I wouldn't say pastel, but it's like pastels mixed in with brights.
Yeah.
I like how the Kens pretty much all wear just like a matching shirt and shorts, and they're great costumes, but it also kind of serves to remind us that the Kens are an afterthought in Barbie Land because they're each wearing something different, but they don't have personalities the way all the Barbies do. All the Barbies are wearing totally different outfits from each other. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was an interesting, like a cool touch. And then we have Alan.
Oh, Alan.
Played by Michael Cera. I love this. I don't really know that much about Alan the doll, but I do love him as a character in this film. And I think it's kind of perfect because, like, his outfit is the same garments as all the Kens, but it's just, like, a little bit off. Like, it doesn't fit the same way as theirs do. Like, the lengths are kind of weird, and it just makes him look kind of awkward. Mm-hmm. And also, this shirt is terry cloth, I think, so it's very retro-looking. It looks really 70s. And then also his makeup is just like a little bit wrong too. And I think they did all of it on purpose because he's supposed to look like awkward, like he doesn't fit in.
Yeah.
And I think it definitely works. Love him.
So funny.
Okay. So then, of course, every day in Barbie Land is the perfect day. So they're having a dance party, that night, and it's a very fun scene. It was hard to get pictures of it because they were all blurry because everybody's dancing the whole time. but it's all shades of white and gold, which is super fun. Definitely makes me think of, like, you know, the fancy outfits that you could buy for Barbie. It would always be like a sparkly gold dress, you know, but she's got like a groovy sequin jumpsuit. And then this is Issa Rae as President Barbie in the front. And I just grabbed this so you could see sort of like the mix of fabrics. All very fun.
All the metallics.
Yeah. Super sparkle. I don't think I have a blurb about
it. So many jumpsuits too. I love it.
Oh yeah. I love it. And the other thing I will shout out is that the, like, diversity in this movie is absolutely great. There's, like, a Barbie in a wheelchair. There's a Barbie with a prosthetic arm. There's, like, different body types of Barbies, and I think that it's fabulous. Okay, so then we're back at the beach. I just grabbed this because I really like all these outfits. This is when stereotypical Margot, I'll just call her Margot, when Margot realizes that her feet are flat. And we're back at the beach, but, like, everybody's kind of in shades of blue today at the beach, and we're doing sort of more sailor nautical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to shout out this actress. Oh, God, I just forgot her name. I wrote it down. Sharon Rooney. She is she's from a fantastic British show called My Mad Fat Diary. And when I saw this movie in the theaters, I lost my mind because I'm obsessed with her, and I was so excited to see her, see a plus-size Barbie. She's so great. She's a fabulous actress. Okay, so then Margot has to go see Weird Barbie, played by Kate McKinnon. And Weird Barbie, of course, is like the one Barbie that we all had where we experimented with cutting her hair and drawing on her with Sharpies and all sorts of stuff. this is a very fun look. I saw a lot of Halloween costumes of this year. I think that this silhouette is very fun and interesting because this, to me, is, like, the most 2020 silhouette in the movie, because this is a very, like, silky silhouette to me, which I think is so, like, we're going to look back at this era and this silhouette of dress is going to be very emblematic of the time. Like a super high empire waist and these big puff sleeves. It's almost like a baby doll dress, but like a, you know, with like a really full skirt. Very silky looking. I love it. It's great.
It's funny because it kind of goes back to that Pride and Prejudice era empire waist, but shortened and poofier with the skirt.
Yeah.
As opposed to the long, like, ankle length.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. Okay. So then Barbie and Ken go to the real world of Los Angeles. And I really wanted to cover their journey there because they have so many cute looks in between then and now, but it was literally like five and I'm like, I had to make cuts. I can't cover everything.
Too many outfits.
I know. This was a real hard choice between all these outfits. But anyway, these are based on, like, a lot of her looks are based on real Barbies that of a different time. They're from 1994 and it was called Hot Skating Barbie. And she was wearing like a pink, like unitard, I think, but it was this print, this like very playful 90s print that's on the leotard. So they were inspired by that. And then like the yellow, elbow and knee pads with the rollerblades came from that too. And then they kind of riffed off that to make Ken's, because I don't think that there was a hot skating Ken. But
it
I think
funny because I, even though I didn't really have Barbies as a kid, like, for some reason, this was, like, the image of Barbie that I remembered.
I do think it was a classic.
I remember this Barbie.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that it's funny because they really had to figure out a look that would actually stand out in Venice Beach. And if you've ever been to Venice Beach, you know that it's full of weirdos. So it's hard to stand out in Venice Beach. So in this scene, they've done that by kind of dressing all of the real people in, like, neutrals. And then, of course, Barbie and Ken are in bright neon, so they really, really stand out. Because Venice Beach is famously a place for weirdos, so.
Yep.
Yep, love it. Okay, so then they change. They're like, well, we have to change. We can't possibly stay in these outfits. And so they steal these from a store on Venice Beach. And I have some notes about this. Jacqueline said that pink denim was, like, surprisingly really hard to find. Like, they could not find the right fabric. So they bought stretch fabric, and then they printed a denim texture onto it, which I was like, oh, what?
That's some commitment.
It is commitment. And also, like, the way that it wears, it looks like denim. So I'm really curious about what kind of fabric it actually is. It just said stretch. So I'm like, is it like a ponte? Like, what? Or is it like a,
yeah,
just like a stretch cotton? Like, what are we working with here?
I know, because I almost would have, like, imagined at least, like, a canvas or something would have somewhat of, like,
throw material, just, like, pink
but
twill.
That doesn't stretch. So yeah. I'm like, I don't know.
Or, like, buy some white denim and dye it? Hello? Like,
yeah.
But so, interesting choice, a very interesting choice. And obviously it served them well because this outfit is also very popular in terms of being reproduced, cosplay-wise, Halloween costumes, etc. I do love mm-hmm. the sort of like foil stars. That feels like such a Barbie thing to me. Like a, and they said that they drew from mostly like 80s and I think 90s Barbies, mostly 80s. Cause she was like, well, that's like the era that Greta Gerwig was growing up playing with Barbies. So like, that's the era she most enjoyed referencing.
Right.
So that made sense. That it's kind of playing on millennial nostalgia, I guess, to go with like the 80s and 90s ones.
Yeah.
And then this Ken outfit is actually inspired by an actual Ken. It was called like Western Stamping Ken. And there was a Western Stamping Barbie, but her outfit was different. And they had stamps, like little stamps on their shoes.
Oh my gosh, that's so cute.
Adorable. Okay, so then we go to a little more of a boring place. We go to Mattel headquarters, and these are like the Mattel office drones who have to go report to the CEO guy that Barbie's on the loose in the real world. And I thought it was a very funny touch that like they were all wearing literally exactly the same thing. And then all of the guys in suits are also kind of all wearing the same thing. The only one who's different is Will Ferrell, who is, I think he's supposed to be the CEO. But he has like a, you know, a pink shirt and a pink tie to show that he is in charge. Nothing to say about this. Just wanted to show the contrast, I guess, between this world and the Barbie land. So then Barbie goes to find, she's trying to find the girl who's playing with her. So she tracks her down at this middle school. And it turns out it's not this girl. It's actually her mom who owns her. But the middle school was also very interesting to me because it was also very flat, like neutrals, lots of navy blue, like charcoal and black. I think that if you visited a real life middle school, it'd probably be a little more colorful. But I think that it was an intentional choice to once again contrast it with like where we've come from, the very colorful land of Barbies compared to like the sad, drab real world. I also forgot this character's name. I don't know. She's just the girl.
She's just the girl.
And in the process of running away, Barbie finds a mysterious floor in the Mattel headquarters where she meets the ghost of the lady who invented Barbie. Whose name I think is Barbara ?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure. So I grabbed this so that we could see. It's kind of like a nice like 60s like little suit that she has on, and this is a lovely scene. And I loved like the softness of the print and just like the classic sort of silhouette that she has. Super great. Okay, so then we finally are gonna escape. And we're escaping with Gloria and her daughter. And Gloria turns out to be the one who has been playing with this Barbie and also giving her the weird thoughts of death and stuff. Played by America Ferrera. America Ferrera, not American. American Ferrera.
That would be an interesting name.
So I grabbed this so that you could see their real life clothes. And then when they go into Barbie Land, once again, many cute outfits on the way to Barbie Land that I couldn't cover. These are their outfits in Barbie Land, which I thought was a fun, it's like a cartoony version of what they were wearing in real life or like something they would wear. So, of course, the teen daughter has like a hoodie and just like baggy sort of like carpenter jeans. Mom has just like a fun print and some pink pants. And then I think that this outfit might be Chanel because Margot, Jacqueline said, if Margot wears anything that we didn't make, it's pretty much Chanel, because Margot Robbie has been an ambassador for Chanel since 2018. And we've run into this before when I covered Spencer, because mm-hmm. Kristen Stewart is also a Chanel ambassador. So Chanel really likes to be like hands on with their ambassadors. And if they're putting like an ambassador on the screen, they're like, yeah, well, we will work with you and get some Chanel into this film. She said they're very interested in supporting cinema and helping us find looks that will work in the story. They sent us anything and everything we wanted. They were just great to work with. And anything that was good but not the right size or color, Chanel just remade for them. They were like, sure, we'll just make it for you.
What a nice connection to have, you know? I know. just remake this, you know. Can you like custom for my size too? Thanks.
Yeah, I'll take one. So there's a scene at the beginning where Barbie is like in the president's office and like at some meetings and stuff, like at the very beginning, where she's wearing these little suits. And I was like, oh, now that I know that there's Chanel in this movie, I can tell which ones are Chanel and which ones aren't. I think that this one is, but I'm not 100%. But it definitely has the feeling. It had like the silhouette is what makes me think that the little jacket, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So jacket cute.
For sure.
Yeah. And then this is, of course, Ken. The message he took away from the real world is that patriarchy is good, horse is good. And then he brings that message back to Barbie Land and basically wreaks havoc on everything. And so this outfit is very much inspired by Sylvester Stallone and Rocky, because there's a scene where he's watching a TV screen and he sees Sylvester Stallone on it. And of course he has like this metal thing hanging from his waist that's like the Metallica logo, but it says Ken. And it's just like, it's so funny. It's so iconic, but it's also, I think it's such a good, like, it's like a cartoon of masculinity. Like it's what someone would think masculinity is if they had never met a real person, which is, that's Ken.
Yeah.
I wish we could see the lining in this picture, because she said that the lining has horses in it and it was one of her favorite details, but I couldn't find. Surprisingly, like, this is the best full body shot I could find. All the other ones were not great. So
interesting.
That's pretty fun. I like it. It's very funny. Ryan Gosling is great in this film. And then this is when Barbie comes to kind of like pretend to apologize to him and make up. And I grabbed this because he's wearing underwear that says Ken on it. And I have a blurb. So since they only had 11 weeks to film and they were filming while they were making stuff, she says that added an sort of like an interesting flexibility where they could add new stuff. And this was actually Ryan Gosling's idea. He came up with the idea for Ken branded underwear. And she was like, we just rushed to make it. We said, yeah, let's do it. And it apparently when like the film's marketing came out, people saw that detail and like lost their minds over it. So I think it's very smart and a very funny little detail. And I'm like, how do you rush to, like, I wonder, did they get, I'm so curious about the process of this kind of stuff. Cause I'm like, did you have the elastic woven? Cause like the Calvin Klein is like the words are woven into the elastic.
Right.
So did they do that? Or were they just like, let's just get it screen printed? Like, I'm very curious about what the process was.
Also, like, how do you screen print onto an elastic without it just like falling apart when stretching, you stretch it?
Yeah.
Like,
it must have been embroidery.
So fascinating.
Or woven. Like, I mean, like a movie with resources like this, like, I feel like they could get their own custom woven elastic. I just like, since I have never designed a large blockbuster film, I don't know. I don't know what kind of resources requested. You have.
Custom printed underwear elastic.
I'm not an Oscar winning costume designer, so I don't know. I don't know what it's like to have money.
What does that mean?
Okay. I only have like three more and I have seven more minutes. Wow. I went fast. Okay.
You did.
Slow down, Sarah, slow down. Okay. So this is one of the Chanel looks, as we can tell by the logo. This is like it. The necklace has a bunch of logos on it too. This is a fun. I think this is also. Is this terry cloth? I don't know. It looks like a really fuzzy
terry cloth up close.
Yeah, fuzzy terry cloth dress. Oh, and then this is also, these pink boiler suits are sort of like the outfits that they wear when they start to sort of perform subterfuge on all of the Kens. And I want one. I want one of these jumpsuits really bad. They're so cute.
They're so great.
I think that they probably made them.
Yeah.
Because there's a picture of Greta Gerwig with the cast also wearing one, and hers is different. So it looks like she bought hers, and then they probably made these ones. Because, oh, like, yeah. I said, they were making a lot of stuff. Okay. And then at the end of the movie, so our Margot Robbie Barbie has like sort of the biggest character arc, because at the end she kind of is like, well, I know too much about the real world to go back to pretending that everything is perfect in Barbie land. And so she does, spoiler alert, she does ultimately decide to stay in the real world and become a human. But this is like the last outfit that she wears in Barbie land. And I think that it definitely shows her evolution, because her hair kind of gets like, it starts the movie really big and then it kind of gets smaller and smaller, you know, like more realistic looking, more human. And then this dress is also less showy. It's, you know, it's not flashy. It's not a crazy print. It's just like a nice, simple dress. So it kind of is showing her character arc a little bit. Yep. And then here's her outfit at the end. I wish I had gotten a shot of the Birkenstocks, because there is a plot point where Weird Barbie is holding up. She's like, you have to choose between. And she's holding up a stiletto and a Birkenstock. She's like, choose between worlds. And so then at the end, as like a callback to that, in this scene, she's wearing like a light pink Birkenstock with this outfit. It's very cute. And this outfit is very stylish. Like, the silhouette is very chic. She looks really great. Obviously, she's Margot Robbie. Like, it's hard to not look great when you look like this. But it's true. The colors are a lot more, I'm not going to say drab. They're more neutral, you know. She's in the real world and she's a human woman now. And not that human
more
woman
real world and not so vibrant.
Yeah. She can wear pink if she chooses to. But she's obviously, like, you know, trying to experiment with like being a little more grounded, a little more neutral, down to earth. Let me see if I skipped any of those quotes. Okay, yeah, I did it. That's it. I was just making sure.
Barbie.
I totally could have gotten more quotes if I had time. I just straight up did not.
It's crazy though, because there are so many costumes in this, it's hard to like parse through. I feel like that takes just as much time to like figure out the ones you really love.
Yeah.
With movies like this, where there are so many options that you have to pick and choose.
Yeah. Yeah. And I there wasn't really any costumes that I didn't like in the movie. So then it becomes a thing where I'm just like clicking through all of the screen caps and just like going through the whole movie. That takes forever.
Yeah. Yeah. That takes so long. So, so true. Yay. Thanks, Sarah. Yay, that was
Barbie.
Fun. It was nice to go back through the movie. I hadn't seen it since theaters, so it's cool to re-look at the costumes, I should say.
The experience of seeing that movie in the theater, I feel like I've only had maybe like 5 of those experiences in a movie theater, where it's like the entire theater is having the best time ever. Like, and I went in blind. I was like, I know that I'm going to love this movie, so I'm not going to watch any trailers. So I didn't even know what it was about. I just knew that it was a Barbie movie and it was feminist, probably. And I think I spent the entire movie just like grinning ear to ear, having the best time ever.
I think that it's was so a lot good. Of people's experience going to see that movie.
It's so good.
Yay. Fun. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
I hope I did it justice.
Well, I am kind of covering a movie that is like the complete opposite of that movie. I decided to cover a fairly new movie as well, Babylon, which just came out in 2022. Although the script has been out, or I guess the idea has been in fruition since apparently 2019.
Mm-hmm.
The director is Damien Chazelle. I think that's how you say his name. He wrote and directed La La Land, Whiplash as well. So he's a very young director, and his directing credits are actually not as super lengthy as many others, but he's already gotten lots of awards for the two movies he's already sent out. He also produced and directed a movie called First Man, and then he was also the writer for 10 Cloverfield Lane, which I never saw, but also was a pretty big blockbuster at one point. The costume designer for this was is definitely a veteran, Mary Zoffries. We know her for so many movies, but she's really famous for The Big Lebowski. She did Fargo. Oh, wow. She did The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. She also did La La Land with Damien. She also did the new movie Interstellar.
Oh, wow.
People Like Us. She did Cowboys and Aliens. The cool thing is, like, her movies, like, from what I remember based on some of these, I haven't seen all of them, but they're very real characters, and they all have a lot of just, like, just based on what they look like and based on kind of the characters and Westerns that she does. She does a lot of Westerns. She also did True Grit, Iron Man 2, ironically, out of all of that. So, again, it's like she's been doing this for a very long time, but also just the sheer amount of variety that she has in her work is really says a lot about how versatile she is as a designer. Mm-hmm. She mostly works with the Coen brothers a lot, who also helped with this film. She's had 54 nominations and 11 wins, which is huge. I'm trying to think. I wrote down some of her wins, but I don't necessarily know that we would know all the different awards, minus the CDG win for La La Land. But for Babylon, she did win in 2023. She won a Satellite Award. But anyways, just some of the credits to give her backstory. Just to give you a quick kind of summary of this movie. It's a retelling of The Birth of Hollywood, but it focuses specifically on kind of the year, I think, 1922 to, like, 1936, I think, was the actual years that they said in a lot of the interviews. But it basically tracks the transition from silent films to when they started talking films. Mm-hmm. There is a short scene at the very end of the movie that kind of goes forward and, like, into the 1950s. Because it kind of shows almost like the fruition of what happens after this very tumultuous time of moving from silent films to talkies. But it's kind of a brief, like, epilogue. That's not the right word.
Epilogue
at the end. It does cover several characters, so very similar to Love Actually, which I was like, oh, why do I keep doing this myself? But it covers a lot of different storylines. But we do follow a young starlet who is played by our Margot Robbie. We follow a big silent film celebrity of the time. And they're all kind of loosely inspired slash sort of similar to actual people who existed during this time. But our Jack Conrad, who's the film silent film celebrity, is played by Brad Pitt. We sort of have a dreamer kind of turned executive producer, who plays sort of the love interest for Margot. We have a sensationalist journalist who's played by, hold on, I have all my notes here, Jean Smart. She ends up becoming a journalist that's inspired by an actual novelist who wrote about a lot of sex appeal and what that meant in the industry. And I'm only naming these because they become important when I'm going through the photos. I will try not to take too much extra time with that. But then the other two characters that I thought were really significant and I really loved that they included them was because they included an Asian cabaret singer played by Lee Jun Lee, and very inspired by Anna Mae Wong, which I was super excited about. And then they also have an African-American live musician that they kind of do like a sort of secondary side story with. I guess before we go into the actual costumes, I ended up finding a lot of interviews about Mary just because this is such a recent movie. But she talked a lot about how much research she did for this film. And she said one of the biggest things that she was kind of told by the director, by Damien, was that he was like, if it is from the 20s, but you can't tell it's the 20s, then those are the pictures I'm interested in. So she was like, the biggest challenge was trying to find photographs that were actually from the 20s, but didn't look like the sort of 20s that Hollywood has now created, you know, sort of the typical stereotype flapper dresses that we see all the time, which aren't necessarily accurate to what was actually being worn by most people during that time.
Yeah.
So they looked at a lot of like sort of the underbelly working class photos. So you do see a lot of that in this movie.
I love that.
The other big thing before I start is just the sheer number of costumes in this movie, because apparently I was reading on an Oscars website that does a lot of interviews and kind of factual information, but there were 7,000 costumes for this movie.
That's and a crazy. Lot.
I think I read in one of the research sites that I looked at that most of them were handmade, which I was like, that
wow.
just boggles my mind. 7,000 costumes, mostly handmade. And they used a lot of in-house tailoring shops that were actually kind of formed at Paramount Studios when they were filming this as well. So the fact that they basically created their own tailoring shop for this movie alone was pretty insane. And one thing I will say about this movie is that it is very, very long. So if you are going to watch it, it is a commitment. It is 188 minutes.
Oh, boy.
And it does track through multiple years. So because of the way that they did the research, I found that there wasn't a lot of, like, you didn't see big major transitions of, like, 1920s silhouettes suddenly turning into 1930s. It was very, very subtly done. And because everything wasn't the stereotypical flapper dresses or even the 1920s like day dresses that we're more used to seeing now with Downton Abbey being so popular. Mm-hmm. I feel like this made the movie feel a little more timeless, I think, because of that. And it felt a little more like you could relate to more of the fashion trends that were happening in this movie than if they had done the stereotypical, like, you know, all of a sudden you're going from 1928 to 1932 and you see a distinct, like, fashion silhouette. Okay, so I will start with this first outfit. And I will actually say, like, in terms of look, I don't necessarily think I liked this one or mm-hmm. this outfit as much, but it became the very popular, and I think this was also cosplayed quite a bit after this movie came out. But the idea is that it was meant to be something that Margot Robbie kind of fashions herself, because she's supposed to come from a very low income family. Her character is actually based on a real 1920s starlet actress who kind of rose in fame, but basically came from the wrong side of Brooklyn, had a sexually abusive home, and just came from a very broken, low income environment. And that is very much true to this character. I think Mary Zoffrey's also really wanted to steer away from the kind of like stereotypical bob and 20s flapper dress. So the fact that she came in this like vibrant red, and they made a point to have her kind of decide on the red first, and then the production designer sort of fashioned everything else around. So I'll show pictures of the party at the very end, even though it's technically at the beginning of this movie. But they said they had like something like 300 plus extras around her. So they had to kind of put everyone else in slightly different, kind of more neutral sort of gold colors to make her stand out a little bit more. All right, moving on. So this is Jean Smart playing our Eleanor St. John, who's our sensationalist journalist. I pulled this, I don't really have a ton of notes. I just loved that this was her party outfit. The headdress. We are so used to that kind of like overly beaded flapper dress headwear, but I thought this was such a nice, like, new, unique way to look at that kind of headwear and still kind of pay homage to the beaded 1920s headdresses we're used to seeing. Also the fact that she is sort of the matron character in this movie. And so she sort of oversees everything. Like, she kind of becomes the voyeur because she's always observing everything that happens from a distance. So the fact that she is in this kind of outrageous costume, and you'll see with everyone else in the party, a lot of them are like either not wearing clothes or it's basically like a giant orgy in this first scene. So the fact that she is fully clothed, but in these kind of really regal and very wealthy looking and opulent clothing, sort of also makes her stand out, even though it's not the same way that Margot stands out. And then our executive producer, but you can tell, like, with him, he starts off in a tuxedo, but it is kind of a more I don't want to say a poor man's tuxedo, but it does look a little more shabby in comparison to the other higher paid celebrities and important bigwigs in the room.
Right.
Then we get to my favorite character, Lady Feizhu. Feizhu is really the proper way to say it. And again, she was really inspired by Anna May Wong, even though that wasn't necessarily the exact inspiration. One of the notes I did write that they did actually get a lot of clothing inspiration from Marlene Dietrich, which you can definitely see here. Yeah, definitely. The tuxedo in particular is a very Marlene Dietrich trademark. And the fact that she is very lesbian in a lot of these scenes. And so I loved this fit for her, because I think that is also something I always struggle with as a small Asian person, is never being able to find, I don't want to say find menswear, but I really like the look of menswear, and it is really hard to find like fashionable, trendy menswear that looks good on a female form.
Yeah.
That looks like it fits well and doesn't just look boxy and weird, or like overly masculine. So I thought they did a really beautiful job here. And I wish that I could have gotten – the only other, like, full-body picture I could get was a drawing, which didn't accurately represent the tails of this coat. But it is a really beautiful – it kind of is a long tail coat. So truly, she really does look just really beautiful in this suit.
It's great. I really like it.
Okay, next one. Okay. And this is actually, I try to get this just so we could kind of see a picture of what she's wearing underneath, but this is after she's done her cabaret song, of course. But because she's good friends with Brad Pitt, she often does him favors to kind of help, you know, be a companion to some of his male friends, things like that. And she also becomes just a longstanding friend of Brad Pitt. So you see her kind of befriend him and come back at his lowest points in his career at different points in the movie. Again, another image of our sensationalist. I love this because this is a scene when she's watching this giant, like, it's supposed to be like a Roman army battle. And she's just watching from the top of the hill with her umbrella and this, like, great hat with a veil and her typist in the back just... So she's just dictating to her typist about what's happening in the hill below. So it's just this, like, you know, it truly is like the wealthy woman sitting on the hill just observing. Right. But I love that they put her in kind of there. And I think they did this with a lot of the characters, because one of the things Mary mentioned was that Damien is really good with color. And kind of seeing that in each of the characters to help them develop. But he definitely has that a lot of that monochrome so that we can tell the characters apart a little bit, but also kind of looking at status and how she utilizes pattern and color and fabrics, I think was really successful specifically for this character. And also the fact that purple for us often denotes royalty. So just this kind of elevation of her status already because of the color she's wearing.
Right.
I pulled this for no other reason than I just thought that this was a really fun dress. And again, also not something I would think of with the 20s. But this was sort of when Margot Robbie is starting to kind of come into her own. She's starting to sort of weed out the other actresses that are kind of threatening her career. And she's starting to become sort of the actress that everyone is vying for. One of the things, too, that I think Margot Robbie's character does differentiate from some of the other bigger actresses is, one, because she doesn't come from money, and she also has a big gambling problem in this movie. She kind of gets rumored as sort of the starlet that's a little more on the whorish side. And so, like, this was a kind of good balance of, like, what she dresses as and what's appropriate for her, but also kind of how she's seen as sort of the more sexualized starlet in all of her roles. Okay, and then I pulled this because this is sort of her first debut. So once she's made her first big hit movie, she ends up going to see her own movie and it gets very well received. But it also, again, it's the same idea of like her idea of a fashionable, trendy outfit for going out to the movies and debuting is very different than some of our bigger, you know, more richer celebrities, which we'll see pictures of in a second. But I also pulled this just to sort of see the kind of other people that are going to the movies. Color was a huge thing for this, but even just seeing the variety of the different people that are coming to the theater and it feeling very real, I think was a very successful thing for Mary. Okay, then we have, hold on, I wrote her name down because I don't actually know this actress, but she was also Olivia Hamilton, who plays our director. She becomes the female director that Margot Robbie works with the most, and they become the most comfortable with each other. And so she kind of makes Margot Robbie big. But I wrote down that she was inspired by Dorothy Arzner, which I'm only throwing a lot of these names out because these are names that kind of started the land of Hollywood. They're not names I specifically recognize. But a lot of these, because, you know, for those who are cinemaphiles, going back to these original names was also, I think, a big part of why this movie could have done well if you had really understood that history. And for those people who did, they might have had a very different experience watching this movie than maybe the general public. But anyways, just wanted to bring that in. The other reason I wanted to pull this was because I feel like I really like how Mary Zoffrey's tied all these color palettes together, even though they're all wearing like slightly variant variant tones of this kind of beige, almost off-white kind of coloring. But I also liked that they kept putting her, like, I kept wanting to think Indiana Jones, even though it isn't Indiana Jones. But just the fact that maybe it's just the fact that she's got the, like, handkerchief on her neck.
I mean, it's definitely got, like, that safari kind of feeling.
Yeah, I think it's, like, that combination of, like, the suspenders with sort of the open shirt.
The colors.
And then the scarf, which she actually wears in multiple scenes when she's directing with Margot. And it isn't until a little later when they both start switching over to talkies or speaking movies and including sound that they start changing out their outfits to also show the transition of that. Okay. So then in comparison to Margot, this is our typical, she's sort of the wealthy heiress celebrity who's been helping pay for a lot of these productions. And she's originally kind of the first big film actress before Margot Robbie comes in and kind of steals the show. So I wanted to pull this partially because to me this feels very, very true to the 1920s in terms of silhouette and look, but also because it also shows the kind of difference between what Margot was wearing in terms of sort of the lower class and sort of what the kind of more everyday, I don't want to say acceptable, but I guess more recognized and wealthy class were kind of wearing to show that difference. And I think that was really successful. Okay. So then moving on to when they transition into talkies. So this becomes Margot Robbie's first speaking role. And their transition, they end up spending like hours and hours, an entire day essentially on this take, this one single scene, because they keep having issues with the sound catching everything. Because now sound picks up any noise in the room and you have to have dead silence. Whereas before you could really just be doing whatever in the room and then you could always edit back over it. So, you know, it sort of shows that frustration of all the different things you have to get used to. So it's, they have to turn off the AC. So she's like utterly hot in there and she's sweating. Yeah. And then she's trying to remember her lines and she has to make her mark because the microphone is only over one spot. And then, you know, things like people keep opening the doors and there's no like red button to say we're filming because people were still getting used to this. So a lot of the just quirks and traumas of filming in the beginning are really shown in this very scene alone. But I pulled this because she's supposed to be a college student, and I just love that this was what their idea of college was supposed to be at that time. And like, again, I don't, I don't know where some of this research specifically came from, but I'd be curious to know, like, if this was
sort of
the normal, like, if there was more of a uniform at that time for these colleges.
I would say no. I would say that skirt is way too short.
Definitely.
It might be pulled from a reference and then, like, kind of modernized a little bit. For sure. Because, yeah, her outfits so far have all been very scanty.
And I definitely think that the length of the skirt, too, also had to do a lot with her character, because they were always kind of trying to sexualize her in all of the scenes. The idea that she was always wearing everything slightly inappropriately or slightly off was, I think, a really specific choice, an intentional choice that Mary Zoffrey's made.
Yeah.
Okay. Then moving on. They had a lot of party scenes in this movie, which I think accounted for the sheer number of costumes that ended up in this movie. But I wanted to pull this so you could see all the costume, like swim costumes that they were wearing. But I wanted to pull this because they, and I thought about pulling this shot, but it doesn't really show anyone in costume. But it showed her closet of all these like really gorgeous Chinese like qipaos that were just hanging in her closet, you know, because clearly she is famous enough that she can afford all of these beautiful clothes. But again, just the way that they made her stand out in all of the scenes every single time. And that very much was a thing with Anna Mae Wong as well. Like, she was kind of the Asian star at that time. And so I love this scene and how much it made her stand out, because she is the only one in this kind of lighter color, but also the fact that she's in this traditional outfit that really emphasized her background. But this is the outfit cover up that she's wearing when they get to the beach in the middle of nowhere, or I should say the desert in the middle of nowhere. But nothing to say about this. I just really loved this look. And it's this very dramatic reveal where she just sort of pulls it off when she runs to save Margot Robbie. Okay, so again, this movie was so all over the place, but I pulled this because this was supposed to be sort of the first rendition of Singin' in the Rain. And of course, this was when they are still switching over and transitioning over to speakies, or talkies, sorry. But rather than doing the big giant musicals that became American in Paris, and Singin' in the Rain later on, what they did was they would have a choir dress up in these little raincoats, and they would have a sheet of falling rain kind of in front of them, and they'd film that way, making it look like it was raining. And then they had a painted picture of Noah's Ark in the background. But I pulled this just because I think the raincoats are just so great, and I know they had to all have been made, because this is not something that exists out there.
Yeah, where would you find that?
But I love the detail of this. And again, it's just so funny that it works so well on both men and women, but also just has all these fun details and pockets. I pulled these because I just wanted to show some of the suits that were really great in the scene. I know we don't usually focus on menswear, but these were two of the suits. Also just to show Manny. Manny is our film assistant turned executive producer. So this is when he starts getting a little more successful, and you can kind of see just the way that he dresses, even just having his collar buttoned up a little bit more, which we didn't see before, to show kind of the sign of, okay, now I gotta dress the part, I gotta look the part, I gotta speak the part. Same thing with our musician. So this is our trumpeter, played by Yovan Adepo, but he's supposed to represent Sidney Palmer, and I believe he was a little bit inspired by Duke Ellington, who was a jazz musician of the 20s. But I love this blue on him, and just the blue and the brown just really, really go well together. But also just this color of blue in this scenery was beautiful. Nice. A lot of these are really random, so I apologize that a lot of them don't seem to necessarily make sense in this movie, because again, this movie was kind of all over the place and there are multiple storylines. Brad Pitt does go through several divorces, as a big name celebrity. A lot of it has to do with his philandering ways, of course. But this is one of his later divorcee/wives. But I pulled this outfit because, again, I don't have any notes. I just, the color is gorgeous. And I love that this is this beautiful lounge suit. And it's just because she's a Broadway actress. So the idea is that she and him have these very differing ideas of what's considered low and highbrow art. Because for her, theater art is highbrow versus film art is very lowbrow. But you can tell the way that she dresses is sort of representative of her way of thinking as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so this is a little backwards, but I pulled this for Manny because I wanted to show kind of his start, because he does start off a little bit more kind of worse for wear, and this is often what he's wearing. And even when he goes later on into wearing more of the suits, and when he becomes an executive, rather than wearing the full three-piece suit like many of his contemporaries, he ends up wearing a lot of vests instead, which I think I pulled another image for later on, but that's mostly what I wanted to pull. Okay, so eventually he becomes this executive producer slash kind of director and kind of reunites with Margot. They sort of re-meet multiple times in this movie. And so he ends up becoming a little more responsible for her. So they end up having to go to this sort of networking party, and she sort of has to schmooze and make nice. But of course, this scene, she ends up feeling so out of place and completely like out of her element. And all of these rich people are basically make her feel like a horrible person, and she ends up having this huge fit. One of the reasons I pulled this was because one of the notes I wrote down was that they actually had to make multiples of this dress. And she mentioned, or Mary mentioned, that it took over 100 hours for labor.
Oh my God.
And so they had to make multiples because she ends up getting jello and food all over this dress. And she also pukes, like projectile vomits all over this dress in front of this audience. So it is a lot, but I wanted to show this dress when it's clean.
Of course.
And then this is what it looks like after she's like thrown food all over it and puked all over it. So of course she takes a bow before she leaves.
Of course it had to be the dress that takes 100 hours.
Yes. Like, yeah, exactly.
Of course.
but one of the things she also mentioned too was that like not only is it this light color that is very not her, but it's also this like really buttoned up, way up high to the neck. Yeah. Everything is covered, as opposed to kind of her usual where she's very exposed. And even like her hair is done differently than normal. The idea is that she's had someone essentially coaching her to speak properly and basically My Fair Lady right. her into this society where she never felt like she belongs.
Yeah.
Okay. So then I pulled this last image of Lady Ju. So she comes in this really beautiful red capelet, and it's a red dress underneath that feels very a little bit Chanel slash late 50s. But I love that it's kind of gone back to this very classic silhouette, and also slightly different than some of her other like traditional Chinese dresses that she's been wearing. So then this is the final scene. So Nellie gets into really bad trouble because of her gambling and ends up basically owing a lot of money to these gangsters who are also very sick on multiple levels. There's a whole scene that I will not ruin. So if you do want to go see this movie, there's like a whole section of the movie where I was just purely disturbed for 20 minutes. But great. It kind of shows you the character of the people that she's in trouble with. And so, of course, Manny goes and saves her, but in the process ends up kind of putting a bounty on their heads. And so they try to escape to Mexico. But this is their final kind of happy moment together where he asks her to marry him. But I wanted to pull this because, again, it sort of shows a return. Like, he is wearing the vest that feels a little more formal to his final stages as the executive producer, but he sort of returns to the kind of softer look of how he sort of dressed in the beginning. And then I loved her dress for this. I couldn't figure out what the material was. But it feels like a good compromise between the sort of sexualized appeal that she had as a younger starlet and also the kind of a stuffy and overdressed look of the party. So it feels a little bit more like she's kind of freed herself before she ends up disappearing. So again, nothing more to say about this outfit, but I also pulled this just for the background. They end up randomly stopping at some party where a random filmmaker shows up and basically films their last moments of engagement. Okay, so going backwards a little bit, I wanted to pull these last two scenes or last two pictures, partially to show the just sheer size of how many people they had to dress. This was like probably not even 1/16th of the room.
Wow.
But you can see like this was the first party that they started in, and you can see the tone of the room so that Margot Robbie's character in the red would really pop out. A lot of these people, I will say, like, this first scene, there is a lot of dressing and costumes, but there were also a lot of people that were, like, fully nude.
Oh.
So it doesn't mean that the costume wasn't thought about for those characters, yeah, but it did mean there wasn't, like, physical clothing on, like, half of the bodies right in this room. right. Which is also still so crazy to think about.
Yeah, that's
And then this was another scene. So I think these were supposed to be the extras for the, like, Roman battle scene.
Oh, okay.
But I wanted to pull this just to show you the sheer number of people she had to dress. Jeez. Like, that's nuts. But the idea was that they were supposed to be actors from Skid Row. So they were supposed to be basically the drunkies and druggies that they pulled from the streets to be these men in the battle. So it's just this interesting, this idea of, like, in the beginning of Hollywood, they're really just doing whatever and whatever they want, whatever they can to make this movie happen and make it epic. And, like, you know, casualties be damned. Mm-hmm. Like, so, again, just that's the last thing I had to say, but it was just the sheer number of costumes, work, labor, all of the stuff that went into this movie is, like, you can definitely see it on the screen for sure.
Wow, yeah. That was, like, an insane amount of stuff.
Yes. Oh, and then the last thing I did want to mention was just her team. Mm. She mentioned Dale Wibben, who was the tailor in charge of making all of Margot's outfits, because there were just so many. So she made all of the multiples of that dress. She ended up using a couple outside tailors for Brad Pitt and a lot more of the menswear. Specifically for when they get a little more wealthy. Mm-hmm. And then her assistant costume designer was Nomi Shakur, which I think is how you say it. And then she had two costume supervisors, Laura Wolford and Hope Slepek. And then two costumers, Kelly Porter and Yen Do.
Mm-hmm.
And then a head dyer and distressing artist, Sarah Brown.
Nice.
So, like, we talk about that being, like, the core team. I imagine that there were other stitchers and other people involved, because that is, like, impossibly small for 7,000 costumes. But even just the fact that they had those names listed, like, you often don't that in our research, which I wanted to at least do a little shout out to those people, even if they don't end up listening to our podcast. But thank you to that team for
great job
making this movie happen and putting all these costumes together. But yes, that's all I had to say.
Wow.
It was an interesting movie to watch. I don't know if I would watch it again.
Yeah. I don't know that I've been convinced to watch it, but I liked looking at the costumes.
Yeah. But it was, as someone who didn't have that back history of like the start of Hollywood, it was kind of fascinating to just sort of, again, this is not necessarily based on a true tale,
sure,
but having that inspiration of seeing the difficulties going from non-speaking to really what that meant, introducing all that new technology and having to suddenly switch your entire way of working.
Yeah. Crazy.
Which, I mean, I'm sure is, I don't want to say it's akin to how we had to deal with COVID and switching over to that, but
yeah, I mean,
but still, like, that idea of the total mind shift of,
yeah,
having to change how you work.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't say that they're obviously, like, not similar situations, but it is a similar, like, big change that changes everything going forward. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Wow.
But yes. That is Babylon.
Great job.
So if you have the, if you have the time for 188 minutes of Babylon.
It's funny because I'll be like, I don't have time for long movies. And then I'll watch five episodes of an hour long show. And I'm like, well,
it's true. It's true. Well, there goes 5 hours of my life. Very true. Well, and I will say this truly does feel like an epic film. Mm-hmm. Like every scene has so much happening in it. I think even Mary Zoffries was saying that it was a much more raunchier script than she was used to from Damien, mm-hmm. especially, you know, because again, he directed La La Land. Yeah. So that was like the complete opposite of what this movie was. To see him go from La La Land to suddenly going to this is very, very unique.
Yeah.
But again, it shows the versatility of these artists. So good for them.
Yeah. That was a fun one. Margot Robbie week. Happy 2024 to Margot Robbie. And Margot Robbie only.
Starting the year off with Margot Robbie. Glad you're with us for another year. We hope you had a good Christmas and holiday season.
Yeah. Who even knows what's in store for us this year?
I know. It's crazy.
I'm sure it's crazy.
We're on year four?
Yeah.
It is year four. Then. Oh, my goodness. That's crazy.
Wow.
Year four, everybody.
Wow.
Keep with us. Please rate and review us wherever you listen to our podcast. We love hearing from our listeners. And thank you for those who have stayed with us from the beginning and are still listening.
Yeah, you're the real ones.
We hope you're enjoying all of our episodes.
Reach out on social media with any requests or anything, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Sounds good. See y'all later. Bye. Thank you for listening to The Costume Plot. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Costume Plot. If you have a question, comment, or a movie suggestion, you can email us at thecostumeplot@gmail.com.
Our theme music is by Jesse Timp and our artwork is by Jojo Siu. Please rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts.